Welcome to The Metabolic Link, a medical and science-focused podcast that explores the common thread of metabolism in health and disease. This is where science meets society.
Welcome to another episode of The Metabolic Link. I'm your host, Victoria Field, and today we are going to take a deep dive into the groundbreaking research that has really uncovered the central role of fructose in potentially driving the epidemics of obesity, diabetes, and a variety of other metabolic conditions. Now, this episode is extra special because we're actually sharing a full presentation from our scientific and medical conference, Metabolic Health Summit 2024. And this presentation is by Dr. Richard Johnson. If you're familiar with Dr. Johnson, you know that he's an internationally acclaimed scientist and physician. He's really well known for his investigations into the metabolic effects of fructose consumption. And he's honestly revolutionizing our understanding of how it's impacting our health. He's also known for his groundbreaking research on the role of uric acid in a variety of metabolic disorders. I think you're really going to enjoy his full presentation. I want to mention, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see his slides, but if you're listening on your favorite podcast players, make sure you check out the full video to be able to see his slides as well, because you may find them helpful as you go about listening to his presentation. Before we begin, though, I want to say a very special thank you to our sponsors. Genova Diagnostics is a sponsor of this podcast, and Genova Connect, powered by Genova Diagnostics, offers simple, at-home, advanced lab testing that's grounded in research, really takes the guesswork out of understanding your health. Their tests help you make informed decisions alongside your physicians so you can actually work towards reaching your health goals, really no matter what they are, because otherwise you're kind of, if you don't know what's happening inside your body, you can spin your wheels quite a bit. So this helps uncover a variety of things, whether it's gut health, hormonal balance, nutritional insights. I've actually personally used their gut microbiome test, which is their GI effects test. I used that when I was dealing with a chronic illness, and actually my physician and I were able to work together using the information that test provided to make informed decisions about next steps in, you know, how we were going to approach me recovering, which I eventually did, which is really great. Metabolomics Plus is another test that I've been able to try through Genova Connect. And that's probably one of the best nutritional profiles there is. You can really uncover a wide variety of things, whether you want to better understand how to support your digestive system, what vitamins you might be deficient in, or amino acids, and so much more. It's really a wealth of insights when it comes to just, you know, the results you get are, there's not really a comparison. Not only do they provide you with your information about your body, but they actually provide you with action items, which I found really, really helpful. Their company is really dedicated to education, which I love. So you're not just getting results, you're getting results with actionable things that you can do to help improve your health. So whether it's gut health, hormones, nutrition, their tests really cover the basis, and they're offering 15% off to our listeners, which is really exciting, on any of their tests when you use the code metabolic link at gdx.net/themetabolic link. That's gdx.net/themetabolic link using the code, no the here, just metabolic link. And I really think you're going to just love what their tests have to offer you along your journey to better metabolic health. I also want to say a special thank you to our sponsors at Element. Now, if you're familiar with Element, you know it's a zero sugar electrolyte drink mix that's free of artificial colors and really any other dodgy ingredients. I personally have loved it for years. It's formulated for anyone on a mission to restore their health through hydration. I mean, whether you're an athlete, whether you're fasting, whether you're on a ketogenic or low carb or paleo diet, it's amazing. And, you know, optimal hydration doesn't just mean more fluids. It also means getting the right electrolyte balance, right? And if you dilute that balance, that's when you can feel really tired. I can't tell you how many times I've been out in the Arizona sun and just felt very lethargic until I grabbed myself an Element packet and I'm feeling a whole lot better. And despite what you hear, sodium is really important, a critical important part of your health. So whether you're, you know, outside in the heat or you're super active or you just want to feel better, I would certainly check them out. I've actually personally used them I personally use them when I was pregnant and also now when I'm breastfeeding. And it's been amazing because it's actually really hard to consume, to stay hydrated, right? Consume enough water, but maintain your electrolyte balance when you're building and nourishing a human. So for me, it's been incredibly helpful in keeping my energy levels up. And they're actually offering an exclusive deal to our listeners. By using our link, you'll get a free Element sample pack with any drink mix purchase when you visit drinkelement.com/metabolic link. That's a free sample pack, which is pretty awesome, with any drink mix purchase when you visit drinkelement.com/metabolic link. Thank you so much for supporting our partners, because when you support our partners, you're supporting us. So please head on over and check out Genova Connect and Element. And without further ado, please enjoy this full presentation by Dr. Richard Johnson.
Our next speaker is Dr. Richard Johnson. Dr. Johnson is a medical doctor. He is a professor of medicine at the University of Colorado. For the last 20 plus years, he's been a clinician and a medical scientist who's been internationally recognized for his work on sugar and how it plays a role in obesity and diabetes. He has been funded by the National Institutes of Health and has widely published with over 500 peer-reviewed publications. With a particular topic on sugar and also fructose. And his most recent book is entitled Nature Wants Us to Be Fat. The title of his talk is A Biological Switch That Drives Obesity, Diabetes, and Dementia.
Nice to see you all and to be have the opportunity to present to you. It's a pretty exciting story that I'm going to tell you about, which is that we more or less stumbled on a discovery that could turn out to be very important in terms of obesity and metabolic syndrome. These are my disclosures. I'm NIH funded. I work half-time at the university, and I recently joined RX Sugar, which is a company that's marketing allulose, and I'm their chief scientific officer. And then I have a book, Nature Wants Us to Be Fat. I also brought, a dozen or 20 copies or so of my older book, which I put out on the front desk there. If anyone wants a copy, they're free, and feel free to take one. It kind of talks about the discovery of this switch. Okay, we're going to begin by talking about the fact that we really are in a world of epidemics. It isn't just the epidemic of obesity and diabetes, which everyone knows about. They call it the twin epidemics. But also, almost most of the common diseases of today used to be quite uncommon. You know, like high blood pressure, for example, was present in only 5% of the population in 1900. Now it's the most common disease in the world, 40% or so. Cardiovascular disease was ischemic heart disease, was unknown in 1900. There were a few people who had angina and so forth. It was discovered in 1910. It became a massive epidemic in the 1900s. And then death rates decreased because of all the drugs and surgeries we have. But actually the underlying problem is still there. Chronic kidney disease has increased. Liver disease, NASH, or fatty liver wasn't heard of before 1970. And now it's 25% of the adult population have fatty liver today. You know, this is an epidemic that's affecting a wide range of diseases. And it isn't just obesity and diabetes and metabolic syndrome and so forth. It's also dementia, Alzheimer's disease. We now know that it really is increasing dramatically. Behavioral disorders, ADHD, bipolar disease, increasing dramatically. Cancers, especially cancers associated with obesity, such as colon cancer, breast cancer, pancreatic cancer, all increasing markedly. And so we see a cluster of diseases that weren't here 100 years ago. And so that raises the question, why are all these epidemics occurring? And what is the cause? And then What if there was just one critical factor that could be driving all of these? Now, that critical factor that most people think about is this thing called the metabolic syndrome, where you develop insulin resistance, as you heard Ben speak about, Ben Bickman, and also with height, it's associated with elevated blood pressure, obesity. And the classic associations of metabolic syndrome have been known a long time. You know, it predicts the development of severe obesity, diabetes, hypertension, fatty liver, et cetera, et cetera. But what we're also really realizing is that metabolic syndrome is really associated with all these other diseases, like what Chris Palmer was saying yesterday about behavioral disorders, dementia, preeclampsia, and even aging and muscle wasting. So in some respects, the big problem is metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance. And that's what the focus has been on. And most attempts to try to block obesity have involved there's basically dietary approaches. And the classic one that Jocelyn introduced was the energy balance hypothesis, which basically says, we're eating too much, we're exercising too little, just cut back on calories. And there's the carb insulin model, which you all know of, which is basically saying carbohydrates are stimulating insulin, high insulin levels are the problem. The seed oil hypothesis is a new one, where they're talking about oils and basically vegetable oils particularly that have increased dramatically in the last century that may be pro-inflammatory and have problems. And then there's this question that maybe we're not eating enough protein. So what do? Do you do a vegan diet, a carnivore diet? Do you do a low-fat diet and remove seed oils? Or do you do a low-carb diet? I'm talking to a low-carb audience, and frankly, I think that the low-carb diet is the best, and I'll try to prove it to you. But the big issue is, you know, all these diets work to some extent. So what do? So the energy balance hypothesis is really supported by the fact that we are eating more than we were. Like, we're eating about 600 calories more than we did in 1965, you know, the average per day. We're watching a lot of TV, and that's associated with obesity. So it makes sense. We're eating too much. We're exercising too little. But of course, it isn't so easy to lose weight. The carb insulin model is really convincing. You have a dramatic increase in intake of sugar, over the century. And we have this very compelling argument showing that high insulin levels are bad and can be associated with all kinds of things. And you have to have high insulin levels to become obese. The seed oil hypothesis shown on the left panel, you know, I mean, there's no doubt that it correlates with the rise in obesity. The meat intake doesn't correlate as well, but there really has been a drop in red meat intake, for example, since about 1970, but it's not as dramatic. But you can see how all these hypotheses make it difficult to understand. And certainly the scientists, at the NIH and so forth, they're confused too. Everyone is confused. So are these hypotheses mutually incompatible? I've heard people say that the carb insulin model and the energy balance are about as polar as the heliocentric and geocentric view of the solar system. And what's the center of the solar system? Is it the Earth or the Sun? Or are they all partially right, but only feeling a part of the elephant, not the whole elephant? It's like the blind men touching. And I'm going to argue that all of these hypotheses are partially right. So the way we're going to address this is we're going to talk about the fact that normally in nature, weight is tightly regulated. And actually, there's evidence in the early, like 1950s, that weight was regulated in humans too. But for sure, if you take an animal in the wild and you fast it, it will lose weight. You stop the fasting, it will go right back to the weight it was supposed to be. If you overfeed it, and then you stop overfeeding it, it will go back to the weight it's supposed to be, and it will go back to the same the way it's supposed to be for that time of the year. So if you're working with an animal that's like hibernating, it will know, I mean, that hibernates in the winter, it will know what weight to go to. It's pretty fascinating. Weight is normally tightly regulated. But there are times when certain animals will suddenly change their behavior and dramatically gain weight. The bear, for example, will maintain its weight through the summer, but beginning about 8 weeks before it hibernates, 10 weeks or so, it will suddenly become voraciously hungry. It will develop, it will eat and gain 10 pounds a day. It will become insulin resistant. Its fats will go up in its blood and in its liver. It develops metabolic syndrome. And in fact, all hibernating animals will develop metabolic syndrome before they hibernate. Same thing with long-distance migrating birds. They will actually develop insulin resistance and fatty liver, elevated blood fats and high fats in their tissue before they migrate. It's purposeful. It's a survival tactic. And it's done like a switch. And the question is, could we be accidentally activating the switch ourselves? And could that be driving the problem we have? So what we wanted to know is, what triggers this switch, and could it be driving all these modern diseases? And I'm going to just summarize in a very important, this is a very important slide. And it points out that, you know, glucose is the main carbohydrate in our blood. It's the main fuel. But there's another sugar that looks just like it called fructose, same molecular weight. You know, it's very similar, but they have completely two different purposes. Glucose is used to increase ATP levels. If you give glucose to an animal, ATP levels go up, acutely at least. And the glucose, the way it works is, it's like giving that immediate fuel. And when you get that fuel, and actually all nutrients do this, except for fructose, that is. So that you have two forms of energy. You have an active energy, which we call ATP. That's the energy we use. And then we have a stored energy, which is mainly fat. And that's used to protect us. And normally, if we're not eating, the fat can be broken down to provide the energy that we would otherwise get from food. So there's this nice balance where the fat is to protect us when there's no food around. And that's why animals get fat before hibernation and et cetera. So, but when you eat glucose, it'll fill the ATP levels back to normal first. And then the extra energy gets really spilled over into fat. It's really, the goal is to replace the ATP. But when you give fructose, there's this really interesting finding. Fructose actually lowers ATP levels. You can say, how does it do that? Well, it actually blocks it at the mitochondria as well as other spots. And when it blocks the production of ATP, the energy has to go somewhere. So it goes into the fat. And so the calories preferentially shift to fat. The low ATP sounds an alarm. You're at risk of starvation. It makes the animal hungry. And the animal will start eating more than it should. And eventually the ATP levels will be recovered, but at the expense of more fat. It's a brilliant system. And also there's a block from the fat being able to release its energy for ATP. So it's a system to trick the animal into thinking it's in a low energy state even when there's food around. And by creating that low energy state, it makes you want to become, eat more and store fat. A great example of this was shown years ago by a guy named Lane. And what he did was he injected glucose or fructose into the brain of rats. And if you inject glucose into the hypothalamus, ATP levels go up immediately. And the animal feels full and it will eat less. But if you inject fructose, ATP levels plummet and the animal will get hungry and eat more. This is a constant finding, you know, that low ATP is really associated with obesity It's associated with metabolic syndrome. If I biopsy a person with obesity and I biopsy their liver or their muscle, their ATP levels are low, or fatty liver, you know? They have low ATP states. Obesity and metabolic syndrome are low ATP states. This nutrient, fructose, lowers ATP. Other nutrients do not. So the way it works is when you eat fructose, this is a complicated slide, but there's like five mechanisms by which it lowers ATP. And we're not going to go through all the five mechanisms, but there's one mechanism I want to emphasize, and that it produces, when fructose is metabolized, it produces uric acid. And uric acid recruits an NADPH oxidase, it's an oxidant, to the mitochondria, and it suppresses the mitochondrial production of energy. And so that's the key. There's a suppression of the mitochondria. It's driven by this pathway. And by lowering the ATP, it creates this low ATP state, which creates an alarm signal. There's only one enzyme that does it. It's called fructokinase, or KHK. That's the enzyme that does this. There's actually two isoforms. One form lowers ATP, and the other one doesn't. And we've knocked out both, and guess what? You protect the animal if you maintain the ATP levels. If you block the other one, there's more ATP depletion and the animal gets fatter. Well, fructose is used in nature by animals to trigger the switch. There's bears that will eat tons of fruit in the fall. Now, we're not talking about the couple fruit that we know are healthy for us. These guys are eating hundreds of fruits, 10,000 grapes in a 24-hour period. They're loading themselves up with sugar, and all these animals do that, and the fructose then is used to trigger this switch that then allows them to develop metabolic syndrome. In fact, our group has shown that fructose drives more than just what we call the metabolic syndrome. It drives hunger. It drives thirst. It drives foraging. Foraging is a very important one we'll talk about later. It increases food intake. There's an acute increase, and then chronically it does it by inducing leptin resistance. It decreases resting metabolism, but not metabolism while we're active. It wants to maintain that activity so you can forage. It causes insulin resistance, which allows the blood glucose levels to go up, which provides fuel for the brain. It decreases the glucose delivery to the muscle. It reduces energy expenditure. And it does all those things that Ben Bickman talked about. Insulin levels are high. Fat is driven. It causes inflammation, which was probably meant to help protect against infection, because an animal that's in a low energy state needs to be able to protect itself. It maintains the blood pressure by increasing blood, causing vasoconstriction and effects on the kidney to maintain blood pressure, to maintain the circulation, and it maintains the glomerular circulation and excretion by increasing pressures in the glomeruli. And it also switches to glycolysis to protect animals, because when it suppresses the mitochondria, there is some ATP produced through a non-mitochondrial pathway, and that pathway doesn't need oxygen. Whereas mitochondria, they need oxygen. So it actually protects animals in a low oxygen state. This mechanism protects animals from not having enough water, fat, or calories, oxygen. It's like a major, major pathway, only seen with fructose. So could this fructose survival pathway be important in driving what metabolic syndrome and obesity? And how does it work? So these are littermates, they're brothers, they've been put on the same amount of, they were born, but one mouse is getting fructose drink in the drinking water and the other one is not. And fructose is sweet, it's like a soft drink. They drink a lot, they love it. But interestingly, when this happens, what happens is they will eat less initially, as they get the calories from fructose. So they maintain a normal balance. They continue to regulate their weight for about a week or two. And then around the second week, they lose their ability to regulate their weight and they become voraciously hungry. They eat more than they should. They're exercising less. They become more, it isn't so much that they exercise less, but they will rest and kind of huddle like couch potatoes because they're dropping their energy metabolism. And they gain weight. They become insulin resistant. This pathway is so strong that it isn't just that mechanism. When you eat fructose, it makes your gut elongate and the villi increase in size, the lining, so that you can absorb food more easily and more effectively. It isn't just the calories. It's the gut is working to absorb more calories. When you eat fructose, there's no taste for fat in our taste buds. But it was just recently shown that when animals become leptin resistant and given carbs, that they start liking fat more. And that makes sense because if you're trying to gain weight and you're activating the switch, you want to be able to eat fat because fat has the most calories. This is how we did it. You know, if you give fructose to an animal, normally if you give an injection of leptin, they'll reduce their food intake. You give fructose, they don't. They become leptin resistant. And everybody with obesity, just about everybody, has been shown to be leptin resistant. This is the mechanism. And you can block it by blocking fructose metabolism. And when you become leptin resistant, you eat more than you should. And you so suddenly we realize that the energy balance hypothesis is correct. People are eating more because they're leptin resistant. They're burning less because fat oxidation's blocked. The equation's the same, it's just that it's not choice. The energy balance theory is correct, but only partially. This is where we did it. We pair-fed animals. So they're all getting the same calories. One's on a high sugar diet and one's not. And we have them on diet. They're on a caloric restriction. So their calories are low. And what you get is these animals that are getting sugar still become hyperinsulinemic. And they develop frank diabetes. And there's still enough calories there that they can actually increase their body fat even though they can't increase their weight. So because they're all eating the same and the low calories, there's no change in weight between the control group. No real significant change. But the sugar-fed animals develop increased fat, increased blood pressure, increased fatty liver, they become diabetic. It isn't just calories. Carbs, and particularly fructose, are driving metabolic effects independently of calories. And in fact, what we've shown is that the weight gain is driven by eating too much. It's through leptin resistance. There is a little bit of weight gain from dropping the energy expenditure. But it's the mitochondrial effects that are driving everything else. The mental effects, the insulin resistance, and everything are driven by the effects on the mitochondria. And there are actual pathways that we've described that I don't have time to talk about. So when we were doing this, we were going, my gosh, you know, we found this major pathway. It's working through the mitochondria and lowering ATP, but it's really sugar. It's really high fructose corn syrup and table sugar that are rich in fructose that's doing this. But what about French fries, right? Do you think French fries are healthy? No, they don't contain fructose. They contain starch, which breaks down to glucose. So what are we saying? Could glucose cause obesity? Yes. Yes. If you feed an animal glucose, you put it in the drinking water, they get fat too. They become obese. They develop metabolic syndrome. They get diabetes. The whole bit. The insulin is being stimulated. They do have high insulin levels. And so maybe it's just that there are two pathways. But and that the carb-insulin pathway is correct, but there's also this fructose story. But there's a trick. And the trick is that there is a way the body can make fructose. There's only one way. It makes fructose from carbs, and specifically from glucose. It's called the polyol pathway. It's active in people who are eating Western diets. And it's activated by high-carb diets. It's activated by being diabetic and having a high blood glucose. And that pathway is like the fuel that as you increase the glucose levels, it's an equilibrium equation. You increase the glucose, you're going to increase the fructose. So now we got these two theories. We got glucose, which is stimulating insulin, causing fat. We have fructose dropping energy and causing fat. Which is the real one? Are they both real? And here's the trick. If you give glucose to an animal, they start making fructose. You can measure it in their blood. You can measure it in their brain. You can measure it in their liver. They start making fructose. And they become all those things. Now, if you give that glucose to an animal that cannot metabolize fructose, what we call that KHK knockout, you block a lot of these effects by 50% or more. The fatty liver, the insulin resistance, everything is blocked, but not completely. There's about a half of the effect seems to be driven by insulin, and the other half is driven by the shift over to fructose. It's actually, we've done this in multiple ways. It's a 50-50. The insulin is driving it from the glucose, or they're becoming, or it's the fructose. But look at this. They're actually both compatible, because when you give fructose and you drop that ATP, it causes insulin resistance. It makes the insulin levels rise so that you actually come back to insulin. The bad guy is high insulin and low energy. That is the bad guy, the bad guys. And so you realize that the carb insulin model completely fits with the fructose story and adds to it, because glucose can also drive insulin on its own, obviously. So these are recent studies in people. If you give glucose, an oral glucose tolerance test, your serum fructose goes up right away. You can measure it, and the serum is just a tiny picture of what's going on, like in the liver and in the brain. And this, the one on the right is a study from Sherwin and Yale where they used a special way to measure brain fructose. And if you bring serum glucose up and clamp it, brain fructose levels rise dramatically within about 30, 40 minutes. So there's like a 45-minute delay, because it takes a while for the glucose to be shifted to fructose. So now we can see it's a little bit more complicated. It's really a carb story, right? High glycemic carbs and sugar, they make fructose. The fructose drops the energy, stimulates and activates a biologic switch to create metabolic syndrome. It works through uric acid, and it's independently of the calories from fructose. They go through a different pathway. But then we see stuff like this. We realize that once we know that how fructose is made, that there are other ways it can be made. Stress, for example, just stress will increase the enzyme that converts glucose to fructose. Stress is actually, you know, emotional stress can activate this pathway. Another thing that does it is salt, because salt raises serum osmolality, or serum salt concentrations, that makes an animal thirsty, and that actually triggers the switch too. And so, interestingly, animals do eat salt. They go to salt licks and so forth because they use it to help stimulate food intake before the winter, for example. So, interestingly, there's actually a literature that high salt intake is associated with future obesity and future diabetes. And there's an old literature from 20 years ago where they took people and they put them on a high salt diet, and you become insulin resistant within 5 days. That's like unbelievable, just by increasing salt intake. So what's interesting is we gave salt to animals. And when we did that, they maintained their weight for several months. They could, they ate more, but they were more active. They kept everything under control. And they also ate less chow. But what happened was, eventually they broke through and they became just like an animal on sugar. They became fat. They became diabetic. They developed fatty liver. And when we blocked the fructose metabolism, we could block it completely despite them getting the same amount of salt. We could block diabetes by just preventing the salt, by just blocking the fructose. And what's interesting is that the effect of salt to raise blood pressure is through fructose. And when you block fructose, you block that rise in blood pressure and also the cardiac changes. It's amazing. This is a really important pathway. So we said, okay, well, can we reverse this by giving water? You know, I always heard, you know, I'm a kidney doctor. People come in and they say, you know, I drink like 10 glasses of water a day and I take a water bottle wherever I go and I'm convinced it makes me healthy. And the physicians in the world, they say, you know, the kidneys hold on to water for you. And do you really need to drink a lot of water? You know, go ahead. But it's real. Drinking water protects. We actually did the study. We could block not just salt-induced obesity, but sugar and high fructose corn syrup-induced obesity by increasing hydration. We should be drinking 8 to 10 glasses of water a day, okay? Now, if you're running marathons, be a little careful because you can suddenly retain water if you drink huge amounts. But for the normal, for most of us here, drink 8 to 10 glasses of water a day. It makes a difference. So then the question is, but why? Why would nature want salt to cause us to be obese? And the answer is that fat has more than a role than just giving calories. Fat also produces water. And there are animals in the world that live in hot environments or live in the sea where water's not, fresh water's not around. And they use fat to provide not just calories, but to provide them water. So in the desert, a lot of animals will have ectopic fat, like on their humps or on their neck or in their tails. And they use that to help them when there's severe dehydration. They break down the fat to produce water. Because when you break down fat, water is released. We call it metabolic water. Whales get 1/3 of their water from their fat, which most of their water comes from the food they eat, because they don't drink salt water. They don't drink seawater. Fat is critical for their survival. And so guess what? If you create mild dehydration and it's got to be mild. With salt, you know, just get the little bit of mild dehydration. That stimulates the production of fat, which is a way to protect the animal. Just like a low ATP says, hey, I'm in danger. Giving salt doesn't actually take away water. It just makes you thirsty. And that's all linked with trying to find a way to become fat. So when you're eating salted pretzels in the bar, that's not good. The salt on French fries, that's not good. Okay, so just French fries not good, period. But when you put salt on it, it's making it worse. Now, interestingly, when we were looking at this, we realized that there's a hormone that holds on to water. It's called vasopressin, and it helps reduce water. And these animals in the desert that chronically have these fat, they have very high vasopressin levels. So we were wondering, could there be a link of vasopressin with obesity? And what we found is that when we created dehydration, that we activated this polyol pathway and the brain started making fructose, and that actually drove the vasopressin production. And when we gave fructose to animals, we found that vasopressin hormone levels go up in the blood. It's called copeptin. And when we looked in the literature, and others have done this, serum copeptin is a major predictor of obesity. It's a major predictor of diabetes. It should be, you know, this metabolic health conference should have a booth with someone measuring serum copeptin, because it's a fantastic biomarker. And then we said to ourselves, could vasopressin actually have a role in obesity? Could it be important in holding on to fat? Because that would be another way to hold on to water. And it turns out that vasopressin has several receptors, and there was one that for which there was no function. And when we blocked it, we blocked obesity. And that's the V1B receptor shown. And we blocked not just obesity, we blocked fatty liver, diabetes. So there is a hormone that drives obesity and metabolic syndrome besides a high insulin. It's called vasopressin. So now it's getting complicated. We've got salt, we got sweet, and these are the tastes we like. Bitter and sour we don't like. But there's another taste that people like, and it's called umami. And what's interesting about umami is it's the MSG. You know, they add MSG to food, monosodium glutamate. That gives you the umami taste. A lot of people like it, you know, the Doritos and, okay. But it isn't just MSG that activates umami. It's AMP and IMP. And you may not have remembered or recalled, but that's part of this pathway. AMP and IMP are part of the pathway that makes obesity. And in fact, umami foods, we began to realize they're foods to help raise your uric acid. Every umami food is a food that raises uric acid. And what we realize is that might also be a taste that the survival switch wants to attract foods like bone marrow and savory, you know, things for the animals that they like that actually activate this pathway. And it turns out that it isn't so much from just being in the pathway, but the uric acid amplifies the polyol pathway. And so we put animals on monosodium glutamate and they got fat. They increased their food intake. Their uric acids went up. Their ATP levels went down. Oh, shoot. Everything I like turns out to activate the switch. And I am, yeah, the IMP and AMP, you make them fat. You know, don't tell me this. And if you put uric acid in the drinking water, the animals get fat. So suddenly I realized that this story is incredible. The animals reason we have the tastes we like is to specifically attract foods that can activate this switch. But the big behemoth are the carbs. They're the big behemoths because they're high glycemic carbs and sugar. These are the major mechanism. Salt and umami don't work on a low-carb diet. They will not drive obesity if you're on a low-carb diet because to make fructose, you have to have carbs. So the keto diet, the low-carb diet, is the answer, or intermittent fasting perhaps. And here is a figure from one of our recent papers, and it shows if you look at the, you know, you begin with high carb intake, you've got the carb insulin model driving insulin, but it's also driving fructose. Now fructose stimulates leptin resistance that makes you eat more. You particularly like fats. The seed oils are fat. It drives obesity. It's in the pathway. But everything, really, all the diseases go through the mitochondria. That's where it is. It isn't the weight gain. It's not really the weight gain that's the problem. That's just storing fat for us. The problem is the mitochondrial dysfunction. Now, to show how powerful this is a study that was published in Nature. Remember that when you suppress the mitochondria, you are suppressing oxygen utilization. So what happens is the mitochondria use a lot of oxygen. So when you suppress it, you're not only making low ATP, but you're preserving oxygen. So there are these animals that live in Africa, you know, the naked mole rat. It goes into these burrows where there's like no oxygen. There's like little oxygen and they survive. And guess how they do it? Paper in Nature. They start making fructose in their body. Low oxygen actually stimulates fructose production. Ischemia stimulates fructose production. That's another mechanism to activate that polyol pathway. So what happens is they make fructose, they suppress their mitochondria, and they start living off glycolysis to make their ATP, which does not need oxygen. It's brilliant. You put a mouse in a burrow, it dies. And very, very quickly, you put a naked mole rat, they have this fructose pathway. It's a survival pathway. And it's doing it by switching from mitochondria to glycolysis. Well, guess what? Inflammation, all the diseases, heart attacks, kidney disease, they're all associated with this shift to glycolysis. And when you block that shift, you start improving disease. But look at what happens in cancer. You put cancer cells love living on glycolysis because they have to live in low oxygen settings, especially when they metastasize. They don't have an oxygen supply initially. They've got to create blood vessels to the tumor. So when you take a tumor and you put sugar on it, or you put high fructose corn syrup on it, the tumor grows like mad. You give high fructose corn syrup to an animal, they metastasize. If you block fructose metabolism with that KHK knockout, you can block it. Nature paper, science paper. And we found it too. What about dementia? What about behavioral disorders? Chris Palmer gave a fantastic talk yesterday. And he said, you know, the problem is the energy. It's the metabolism. It's the mitochondria. Well, if you give sugar to an animal, they start having trouble walking through a maze. They can't get through a maze. Many papers. The sugar causes insulin resistance in the brain. There's certain regions of the brain that require insulin, and the glucose can't get in. They're not getting the fuel. The mitochondria actually decrease, their function goes down. There's oxidative stress. And these are from the fructose that you're feeding. If I give high fructose corn syrup to an animal, its ATP levels in the brain go down immediately, within minutes, actually. And if you keep giving them sugar, they start getting amyloid plaques. And they become demented. And you know what? There's actually a recent study where they knocked out KHK in a diabetic animal to rescue cognitive dysfunction. And if you look in the brains of patients with Alzheimer's, their fructose levels are high, 5 to 6-fold higher. Their ATP levels are low. They have all the findings of fructose. So why would that be? And the reason that is because fructose drives foraging behavior. And foraging behavior requires you to go into an environment you've never been. You've got to be looking around quickly. You can't deliberate. You have to lose your self-control because you got to go into a dangerous area. You don't want to remember how dangerous it is. You're going to have to go into areas where there's predators. You're going to have to be impulsive. You're going to have to be brave. When you find the food, you have to eat it fast and keep moving on. All these behaviors are driven by changes in the brain. And that what it is when the cortex has self-control, so you want to inhibit the cortex. The hippocampus drives recent memories, you want to depress that. But the visual cortex, where you can see, you want to heighten that. So guess what? You give fructose to a person, the visual cortex lights up. The blood flow to the brain goes down to the cortex. So, whereas if you give glucose acutely, it will increase it until it converts to fructose. And then the fructose decreases the blood supply. It turns out that it completely explains why those regions of the brain are affected in Alzheimer's and other regions are not. It also explains how this happened. This was meant to be a foraging response. It was to help us. But if you continually activate it and activate it, the mitochondria are being suppressed and suppressed. It's an oxidative stress. Eventually, they start dying. And when the mitochondria and the ATP levels go too low, you start getting neuronal death. There's this wandering response in Alzheimer's. And, I've shown that. There's this wandering response where they, 8 out of 10 Alzheimer's patients kind of just wander off. That's probably a foraging response. That's probably the foraging response. All right. And it's also, explains things like ADHD. And Chris, I think you're in the audience here somewhere, but we would love to work with you because your ideas are fantastic, and I think that this could link well. So in summary, what we think's happened is that fructose was a nutrient developed in nature, based in evolution, to be a nutrient to help store energy, to a survival mechanism. Animals in the wild use it. We've actually shown it in evolution as well. That fructose was meant to protect, forage, fat, accumulation, insulin resistance, inflammation, but we developed taste so we could find those foods. And now we can eat 24/7. The grocery stores are open. You know, if you're hungry, just go down. I want popcorn, I want sugar, I want this. And so we're activating the switch. It's mainly a carb story, but it's not a fully a carb story. And it's creating all these diseases. So I believe that if we can block this pathway, we will rid ourselves of a huge number of illnesses. So what can we do? Do we stop eating fruits? No, don't stop eating fruits. You're not eating 100, you know, mangoes. You're eating one or two. And the intestines will actually inactivate the first 8 grams or so, 6 grams of fructose. So don't worry about that. Don't worry about, you know, something that has 2 grams of fructose, carrots or something. Don't worry about that. Worry about sugar. Worry about high fructose corn syrup. Worry about soft drinks. But don't worry about natural fruit. Worry about fruit juice. Don't eat a lot of dried fruit. But basically, so here are my general recommendations. Reduce sugar. Reduce salt. Reduce starchy carbs. Go on a low carb diet. Go on a keto diet. That will get them all. Reduce alcohol. Alcohol actually gets converted or induces fructose as well. I just don't have time to go into it. Seed oils. That's like the firewood. Fructose is the fire. But you know, if you're on a low carb diet or keto diet, you can probably eat all the fat you want. I don't think you're going to get fat because you're going to regulate your weight. Processed meats, salty meats. Meats are particularly bad if you're not on a low-carb diet. If you're on a low-carb diet, the meats, again, they're working primarily by stimulating fructose production. And if there's no glucose around, carnivore diet's not going to make you fat. Hydrate. Take omega-3. They do block this pathway. Vitamin C blocks this pathway. Vitamin D and B are good. Natural fruits. Allulose. We're going to have a conference on allulose. I joined a company that sells allulose, but it's a really interesting sugar. You should come to the workshop. This is a natural sugar that looks like fructose and does not activate the switch. And it's really looks as a beneficial sugar. It actually lowers glucose. Vegetables, dairy, keto foods, olive oil, chocolate, coffee, these are all good. I just don't have time to go through them. Exercise, sleep, read, use your brain. And all these diets, low carb, keto, paleo, intermittent fasting, vegan, DASH, Mediterranean, I even put in a diet in my book. They're all these diets you can, you know, we can't live in a world where we don't eat any carbs or any, you know, umami food or any salt. I mean, we're going to eat some. So the trick is we're going to have to learn how to regulate it. And we're making a difference, you know. The sugar intake has gone down. The incidence of diabetes is slowly coming down. Obesity is leveling off a little bit. But we're still inundating our world with sugar, salt, processed foods, and so forth. So special thanks. I have a website. I have this book, and I have free books from my previous book that was, it's kind of old, but it really it was around the time we discovered the switch. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Metabolic Link. I hope you enjoyed that full presentation by Dr. Richard Johnson. If you want to watch the slides and you're listening to this on a podcast player, head on over to our YouTube channel at Metabolic Health Summit. If you like this episode, leave us a review, leave us a comment, let us know. The more reviews we get, the more eyes and ears that are going to be able to really consume the Metabolic Link and help us spread the science of metabolic health and therapy. We really, really appreciate you listening or watching. And make sure you stay tuned because we release a new episode every other Tuesday, and we've got some really great ones in store for you coming up. So until next time, thanks so much for being here, and I'll see you soon.